So we have been here for a few days, so a week or more than a week, and then we go back. And within a few days or a few weeks, all what we have learned here, all what we have gained here, is lost. And all what we remember is our memory of the time we have spent here trying to train the mind. If it is something worthwhile, or if we found that the kind of training of our mind is something, a worthwhile task to do, a satisfying work to do, something that brings us happiness and peacefulness and calm of mind, reduces the worries we have, then we should keep it up when we go back. So, and then, therefore I want to give you a short advice how to keep it up. We can only keep it up and maintain a certain status of calmness, of peacefulness, of happiness in the mind when we keep it up, when we keep it up and do it daily. So the first thing when we wake up is that we sit down and practice. Maybe in the beginning for half an hour, and then in the end for an hour. When we come back from work, we practice again. We wash our mind of all the things that happen during the work, before we can do whatever we want in our spare time. And before we go and sleep, we wash our mind again. We train our mind. So if we do that 3 times a day, and if we do that daily, we can maintain a certain peacefulness, a certain happiness, and a certain calmness of mind. We also keep up our concentration. The power of the mind to be able to concentrate. And if we do that, see, they're excited when they see some food. So if we do that, we know there are two things when we train our mind in samadhi, and that is keeping it either on the Buddha or keeping it on the breath, to enter the state of stillness, to enter the state of calmness, then we also develop the faculty of being able to concentrate. This is not only useful for the practice of samadhi, and it's not only useful, or it is also required for the investigation of wisdom, for the investigation to gain wisdom. And when we are back in the world, it is also useful to reduce the amount that it takes to make a task, or to fulfill a task. Concentration, when you notice, when you have to learn books, when you read books and your mind wanders off, you don't get the subject. You have to read it and read it and read it over again, because the mind is not concentrated. Once the mind has gained the faculty of being able to concentrate on one task, the task is done in no time. Because we are able to concentrate, we are able to focus just on this one topic. And nothing else interferes. But of course, we are not able to do it now, so we have to train. We can train it in intensive periods like this when we come to the monastery, or we can train it to maintain it in the period when we are at home. But we have to do that, and we have to do that daily. Don't think that it will last. It will go very quickly. If you don't keep it up, if you don't keep up the daily training in the morning when you come back from work and before you go to sleep, and just in the beginning, maybe just half an hour. Just half an hour. So how much is that? When you think about how much time you waste during your day, 1.5 hours. Half an hour in the morning, half an hour when you come back, and half an hour before you go to bed. And that will change your life. Just this thing, this will change your life. There is more satisfaction in your life, there is more happiness, there is more calm, there is more concentration, and it will affect your work. It will affect your daily life. This is one thing how you can maintain or at least, you know, keep up the ability to meditate, keep up the ability to focus, keep up your level of concentration. Now another thing, what you have to do if you want to change the course of your life to experience a more comfortable life, to experience a life that has more happiness than it used to have, then you have to also do investigation. That means after you come back from work, after you have done half an hour of meditation, calming your mind and getting rid of all the topics that are in the mind that have been gathered up during the process of work, then you reflect. You just let pass the day by and see what has been going good and see what has been going bad. What has been going good, you will ask yourself to develop it further so that it gets better and better each day. What has been bad during the day, you try to change, you try to find the sources and try to change. If you do that, in the long run, it will give you a life of satisfaction. If you don't do that, you just stumble in the old way, old-fashioned way, and there's nothing that you can expect of your life. Just what you have experienced in the last 20, 30 or 40 years. If you do not make a change, if you do not try to develop things that are wholesome and let go of the things that are unwholesome, we will not change the course of our life. It's like we're sailing always in the same direction. But when we see that the direction is leading us to hell, then we better change our sails and look for a wind that leads us to another direction, to the wholesome direction. When you are in life, when you are in your daily life, when you go shopping, you want this or you want that, then you buy it because you think that's what you need. So for instance, if you go in a shop and buy a soap, because you want to clean yourself and because you want to smell good. So you go home, you buy the soap, and it promises that it cleans you and it smells good. You go back home and you use the soap and you see it's not working. It's not neither cleaning you nor does it smell good. Would you ever buy the soap again? I doubt it. You would not buy the soap again, you would try another soap. And then another soap until you find the soap that really does the job. Some people, or quite a few people in the West, are then go in front of the court. Because that what the product promised is not what they got for. So they sue the company. Well, now look at our mind. It promises us this, it promises us that, it promises us if we do this, we become happy, if we do that, we get rich, if we do this, we get this or get that. It promises and promises and promises. But does our mind ever keep the promises? No. It just tells us constantly lie. But do we take our mind in front of the court and sue it? Because it has not fulfilled the promises? Why don't we take our mind to the court and get it imprisoned? Because it actually does not do what we want. It's constantly promises. This, if you eat this, you know it's nice, it's a nice taste. But then the after effect is acid burn. Because we ate too much, or this food doesn't go with our stomach. Do we sue the mind? Do we track it in front of the court? No. We just take it in. So why is there a difference? When we act in worldly manners, when we go to a shop and buy things, you know, we always look that these things are fulfilling the promises. If they don't, we might even get in front of the court to sue the company or to sue the people who sell us this stuff. But we never go in front of the court if our mind doesn't keep its promises. Because most of the time we even don't know that it doesn't keep its promise. We just follow it. We never look if that, what the mind promises and what it asks us to do, ever gets to satisfaction. We never check it. We never check it out. We believe it, and we believe it, and believe it. And we are fooled and fooled and fooled. All time long. All year long. All life long. This life, last life, next life will be better. If this life is not good, how will the next life be better? If you go to Japan, it will be better. If you go to New Zealand, it will be better. If you move from this city, it will be better. If you have a new partner, it will be better. That's what the mind promises all the time. Isn't it? But is it right? No. We never check it out. We never prove the mind wrong. Because we think it's us. It's a little sweet whispering voice behind our ears. That promise and promise and promise. Isn't it? We always get angry at the other people who do something wrong to us. Who lie to us. Who steal us. Who rob us. But we never get angry at our own mind. Who steals us from the happiness. Who robs us of our peacefulness. And who lies to us constantly. Interesting. Isn't it? Very interesting. The one fundamental thing that is always with us and always brings us this heap of dukkha, the heap of restlessness, of pain, of suffering, we never ever question. In the world, this would not work out. A company that would act like that would be out of business long, long time ago. But we keep it running. Because we believe in it. We so much believe in it. So we have to undermine it. We have to undermine this power of this liar. This notorious liar. Or this notorious promise. Promise, promise, promise. We have to undermine it by observing our actions. By observing, what do we want to do? Okay. Make a mental note. What is it promising us? Make a mental note. After you finished your job, or after you finished doing it, or speaking, or thinking it, look at the effect it has on the mind. And then you will be surprised, because 95% is just not the result that we wished for. Think about it. Evaluate. Look for yourself. It's just not what the mind promises. But we still believe it. The next time we said, oh yeah, 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 but this. And then, oh yeah, 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 but that. And oh yeah, you know, the moment it sees, you know, it doesn't reach happiness. Oh yes, this, but this and this. And we fall for it. We constantly fall for it. We constantly fall for this magician who is called Avijja. This absolutely notorious liar that just tells us. And we believe it and believe it and believe it. Never question it. So, to get at it, and there's nothing wrong with checking out. You do that in worldly terms. You ever check out. If you go to work and the paycheck is not coming, you check that. Or, you want that money, because you worked so hard for it. But when the mind is telling you to do this kind of work, and it promises you to get that kind of results, you never ask for the revenue. You never check it out if it's true. And if it's not true, why are we still believing? Why are we still believing? Why are we still going? Because we never prove it wrong. Now, the first thing to become a little bit more calm and get some more happiness in our life is to prove it wrong and not believing it anymore. Check it out. Check it out. What you think, what you want to do, and what kind of effect it has, and how does the effect it has differ from the promises the mind made us. Boy, you will be surprised. You really will be surprised. That most of the things you do and you think that lead to happiness actually lead to dukkha, to painfulness, to suffering, to restlessness, to heartburn, or to other things. Now check this out. And this is things that you can do while you're back in the world. And of course, here in this monastery, we should also do. But most of our tasks, our daily task, is the practicing of mindfulness and calm. So we don't have this kind of activity. But we have these activities in the world. We want to go to eat. We want to go to see a movie. We want to do this and we want to do that. We want to meet a person. We want to talk to a person. We never ask why, what we are going to do, and what kind of effect it has on us. So let's do that. Let's do that, and you will be surprised. You really will be surprised. And once you see that, that is constantly lying to you, then you start not believing it again. And maybe you start to change your actions. See the actions that causes actually wholesome results. And foster them. Actions that causes wholesome results. Actions that causes sukha. Actions that causes happy feelings or pleasant feelings or peaceful feelings. That, if we see that this kind of action will cause this kind of pleasant feeling, then we will foster it. Because in the end, all what we want is happiness, isn't it? Always, whatever we want to do, you know, we want to gain some sort of happiness. Some sort of pleasant feelings. So if we check it out, if we prove our actions to be wholesome or unwholesome, then we can decide what kind of action we should do and what kind of action we should let go or should not do. And that's all. And that's all what we need. And this, if we keep up with our daily practice of meditation, as in the morning after work and before bed, and check out the things that we want to do and what kind of effect it has on our heart, if we do that daily, then it will change our life. Be honest with yourself, and of course, keeping the five virtues, keeping the five silas, keeping the five precepts. The five precepts is not harming any living being, not taking what is not given, not using lie or not lying and using harsh speech, not indulging into sexual misconduct, and not taking any drugs and alcohol. drugs and alcohol that reduce mindfulness, not drugs as defined in the West. It's everything, it's alcohol and drugs that reduce mindfulness. These are the five precepts. These we keep, then we keep our daily meditation, and then we check out the mind. And bring it into court. Sue it for the unhappiness it gives you. It promised you happiness, so take it to court and imprison it for a while. How can he do that? How is it possible? Because we never prove it wrong. We always believe it and that's it. We believe whatever we want. We never check if our belief is in line with the truth. So today, just a short talk on the advice how to practice in daily life. It's useful for people who have stayed here for a while and go back or have to go back and pursue their daily activities. Keep that in mind.
On the
what?
On the body. Mm-hmm. The asubha meditation, mm-hmm. Yeah, on the rupa. Mm-hmm. In some of the traditions, yeah, when they do meditation on the rupa, mm-hmm. they go to the extent to analyze the rupa until kalapa. Let me see.
What do you mean with kalapa?
In the absolute single molecule of the body.
Oh.
So I'm not sure in this tradition of the Ajahn Mun lineage would that be the extent when we analyze the rupa.
Well, if you can break it down in the color past, you know, then it's fine. But I think it's pretty difficult. Break it down in the four elements.
That is okay.
Break it. It's you know, it's not, you know. We have to understand the nature of the body. The body, feeling, sanya, memory and association, thinking and consciousness. Are all made out of these four elements. The earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. The five khandhas are made out of these elements. So bring them down or dissect them or break them apart until there are only four elements. Any kind of the khandha. But of course with the nama khandhas it's very difficult. So we start with the one that is most cross, and that's the body. But we also want to do, when we investigate, we, you know, an atom itself is not really disgusting. When we do asupa means seeing the ugliness of the body. Now just think about one thing. Whatever you put inside your body is tasting nice, smelling nice. Whatever comes out of this body is a stinking piece of shit. This is one reflection. Whatever gets in touch with the body is nice, you know. Our shirts are nice and are smelling nice. Once we wear them for a day, they're stinking. Where is that smell coming from? When we hang our robes or our skirts and blouses and trousers outside in the air, they don't get that smell. But the moment they get in contact with our body, they get that smell. And once we smell it, we want to wash it. So whatever comes out of this body is something that has a disgusting nature. We just don't want to see, we just don't want to care about it. We wash it away when we take our shower, or we wash it away in the washing machine when we wash our clothes. Or we flush it away when it comes out of our anus. We don't take a second look. Before it has beautiful, nice tasting food. Or drinks or whatever. In the end it becomes just one color and one smell. What is it that in our body turns it into these disgusting things? Well, think about a factory in the world. All good things come into this factory. And what comes out is a piece of shit. So, do you think this kind of factory would have any success in our world? I doubt it. Nobody would buy this product. But we keep it alive. And we cherish so much. The moment we look in this mirror, we cherish this body so much. We love it, you know, and we tune it up. We get our hair styled. We get our body styled. But we never look what is inside this body. So our super practice is actually looking inside. What turns everything that is nice and beautiful and smelling into something that is utterly disgusting? And then once we have understood this, that there is nothing, when we open the skin and look, when we see the flesh, the fat, the blood, the pus, then we get disgusted. Just the idea of it gets disgusted. We'll go to the cemetery and look at a rotting corpse. The smell is extreme. But that's us. That's the body. It's a body that we occupy. And we so much love. And when it dies, you know, we were just looking for the next. So our super practice is from going from outside. So in the beginning, we just look at our hairs, or nails, or teeth, or skin. Well, what happened to our hairs when we don't wash them? We wouldn't like them. Our skin if we don't wash it. Like our teeth if we don't clean it. There's ghastly smell in the mouth. We don't like it, so that's why we brush our teeth. And our fingernails or toenails, and they get dirty and ugly, and they grow. And the hair grows. So we have to cut it back into shape. We never give it a second thought, this body. We always look in the mirror and then we're satisfied. Or if somebody else, you know, maybe it's not the mirror, somebody else comes, oh, you're nice looking. You're a nice looking fellow. And then what keeps us up? That what keeps us up, this factory. The factory called the body. So once we want to get at the truth, then we investigate. And that is called a super practice. You understand? If you just, you know, it's a way to avoid the disgustingness if you just go into the atoms. You don't see the disgustingness of this body. But if you open it up, just take a knife, you know, or a scalpel and open up the skin and then you see the blood dripping out and then, is that what you like? Or then just tear off the skin, completely tear off the skin. And then men and women become one and the same. There's no attractiveness anymore. The moment, or have a zipper, you know, or put a zipper in it. Put a zipper in your skin and then open it up and close it down. And once it's closed down, it's nice again. And then open it again, it becomes disgusting. And then close it down, it becomes nice again. And that happens, and that is our method. It's a method for the monks, you know, to get rid of this raga tanha, of the sexual sense of desire. We open up the body that we so much desire until it becomes so disgusting that our sexual interest completely erases. It's the opposite force. Once we close the skin again, you know, our sexual greed comes up again. Then we open it again. And then it deceives it. And it's once we train to do that instantly, that is our refuge. That is our only way to stay as a monk without disrobing, without getting fooled by the other sex. It's the same for the man or for the woman. That is our method. Otherwise, if we wouldn't have this method, there wouldn't be too many monks around. Because the sexual desire is so strong. You notice that when you've been on practicing somewhere in the woods and you come back to a monastery and you see a female, whoosh, it comes up. It doesn't have to be extremely beautiful or, you know, but just it has to have a nice sound, you know, and that tracks you. If you don't have the methods or tool ready to counteract that force, you're lost. And that's why we have to do that. For lay people, this is not so important. But for people who want to go all the path beyond greed and hate, this is something we have to do. It's a must. It's not much. It's the only way to go beyond greed and hate, to look at the loathsomeness of this body, to open it up and see what's in there. Now, if we all would be skeletons and run around, you know, there would be no interest in each other. Have you ever seen a skeleton making love to each other? It's very fun. Two skeletons kissing each other or making love, you know, that it looks just absurd, doesn't it? But if it's a female body and a male body, it looks very enticing. So next time when you see that kind of scene, you know, just imagine to be a skeleton. And maybe you smile. Because it's so absurd. What are they doing? Humbling around. Okay, you understand?
Yeah. Is this that in the Burmese tradition, there is this, they call Pak Ao Meditation Center.
Mm-hmm.
What they focus is to develop the jhanas, like mm-hmm. we discussed the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people, they claim that they can practice to a certain extent that they can see their kalapas.
Well, if they claim and if they think they can see it, then maybe they see them.
Mm.
So. The Lord Buddha saw it. He defined the atom 2,500 years ago. Our scientists found it out 50 or 60 years ago. So he could see it. I doubt that they can see it. You know, maybe there are some who can see it. But of course, you know, if you go into this, in the state of jhana, of nothingness, then that's all what is remaining. It's the seventh jhana. No thingness. And that's just, you know, if you picture it in the terms of the world, it's just like atoms bouncing up and down. That's why you call it no thingness. Because everything in this universe comes down or boils down to this movement of the elements. Well, it's an experience, you know. It's not beyond our ability. So if you train it, and in Burmese tradition, you know, they do train the jhana. Quite a few of them. Burmese masters, there are some Burmese masters. I don't know. I cannot say, I cannot judge, because that's what they do. I know only here in Thailand it's not done. And I know why it's not done. Because Sanatana says to develop the jhanas takes about 20 years extreme hard work. And what do you get from it? Some nice experience. If you would put the effort of these 20 years, this kind of effort, you might be able to get to the stage of anagami. And that is a relief. You're not born again. It's much different. You might be able to develop some supernatural powers when you develop the jhana. But what can you do then? You can fool yourself and you can fool others. So, and we fool, we don't need to develop anything, we constantly fool ourselves. We constantly deceive ourselves, we constantly fool ourselves. So we don't need to develop more tools to fool ourselves. We actually need to reduce the tools to fool ourselves. And see, you know, what is there, what remains, what is the truth. That's actually what we have to do. And that brings a lot of calm and happiness and peacefulness in our mind. And that is the thing, after all, that is the thing we are after. I don't think that there is any being in this universe who is pursuing unhappiness. They all try to get, you know, with whatever they do, they try to get some satisfaction out of it, some happiness or some pleasant feeling. They're not there, you know, for unhappy people. Okay? So, if there are no more questions, then we close it up.